is Bump and Stacey
on Seattle Sports.
Streaming through the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacey Ross.
Here we go now.
Joining us now on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline, talking Mariners and the rest of baseball with Scott Braun, host of Foul Territory. Scott, how's it going?
I'm great, Stacey. How are you? And a nice little outburst for the Mariners last night that I think made everyone feel a little bit better.
I was going to say, so Bump and I spent all of yesterday trying to dissect what the heck is wrong with the offense. Like, why is it inconsistent? You know, the average is low. Everything is low. And then, of course, they come out in just an explosion and we look like idiots. But there is still something to be said for, look, sometimes this offense can be hot. Sometimes they can look great. Other times they're just wildly inconsistent. Tell me what you see from this offense. What works and what doesn't?
Okay, I don't think it's good enough to be a World Series winning offense. I didn't think that in the offseason. I think they have had World Series winning pitching for at least the last year or two, this season for sure. This pitching staff is the best in baseball. They have the best starting staff. I don't even know if it's close if you go 1 through 5 or 6. So this is the best time in franchise history to put together a World Series title. We all know they didn't do enough in the offseason. They had to kind of reshuffle and maybe add a little bit more contact to a lineup that actually has not produced that. It's been the biggest swing and miss lineup in baseball. So I just wanted to start with that blanket. Not good enough. Can it get better? Yeah. Usually it's actually easier to acquire impact bats at the trade deadline than it is to acquire pitching. They don't have to worry about the toughest asset in baseball. But you're getting players that did not have this level of swing and miss in their game. I don't look as much at batting average nowadays. I think the average batting average in baseball right now is down in like the 239 range, something like that. So everybody looks terrible in their batting average nowadays compared to what it was 10, 15 years ago. It's the swing and miss, though. They can't lead the league in strikeouts. After last year's team was close in that category, and they felt like they fixed that problem with additions like Jorge Polanco, subtractions like Eugenio Suarez. Suarez has looked pretty good with the Diamondbacks. So overall, Stacey, I think it's been a top-heavy offense. Last year, it was essentially three guys, Julio Rodriguez, Cal Raleigh, and J.P. Crawford, two of which I think would be better off hitting lower in the lineup. That's Cal and J.P. They're great, but I don't want them to be my marquee premier bats. I feel like even Cal feels that way. He's clutch as hell, but I'd rather have him in the seven spot. So overall, the concern level is still sky high despite the 10 runs they put up.
Yeah, I'm with you, Scott. What I'm hearing is that they're just not good enough right now, and they're not good enough with Julio not being the guy that we expect him to be. How long do you give Julio, and do you think this team needs to be aggressive when it goes acquiring another bat? That's something that we're just not used to seeing here in Seattle, though, unfortunately.
Yeah, I'm just so confused, Bump, at what happened this past offseason. I felt like they were building up to this moment, and they were going to be in the running for a marquee bat. And, of course, we talked about Ohtani a year ago. The hopes were high until it was really squashed hard early on in the offseason. But forget that. There were plenty of other big names that I think would have been major contributors to this team on offense, whether it was someone like Juan Soto, who was the biggest trade acquisition. That was a player that the Mariners totally could have handled. He's 1 year, about $30 million. He's worth about $50 million in today's game. It would have been the perfect aircraft carrier. For me, I'm not worried about Julio. He started slow like this last year. He was MVP level for the last four-ish months of the season. I don't think there's enough in terms of indicators to tell me otherwise in terms of, you know, how hard he's hitting the baseball. Quality at-bats to an extent. It's just that we've had a trend now for the last 2 years where I think he is chasing a little bit more than usual. And whatever word you want to use, pressing, I feel like it's trying to do too much. That with the combination of getting the best pitch sequencing from the opposing starters, because they have hitters meetings every day and they say, who are we circling? It's usually one or two batters, right? They circle Julio every single night. They say someone else will do the damage against us. This is not the guy that's going to beat us. Just don't feel like he has enough help. And that's a real thing.
Scott, you've spoken with a lot of former Mariners as part of Foul Territory and current Mariners. I know Cal's been on before and you guys get so many great guests. What have you learned about this team that's been interesting to you? You know, what questions do you have? Just for, as someone from the outside looking in, what's most fascinating to you about the Mariners?
I think they feel like this is a World Series caliber pitching staff. And I also try and dig into why they've been so good at drafting and developing pitching and even bringing pitchers over and turning them into magic. There's probably 4 to 5 teams that are doing that at an elite level in Major League Baseball right now, and the Mariners are up there. I actually think one of their big picture approaches is what's a huge turning point in our game right now with all the pitching injuries. The Mariners teach efficiency. They focus on command and control. Then you build up the stuff. Most players that get drafted nowadays can add ticks of velocity, but the focus on making sure that you can actually get through 6, 7, and for some guys, occasionally 8 innings makes all the difference, because there's a limitation in terms of how many pitchers you can have on a roster at any given time. You're going to do damage to your bullpen if you keep beating them up early in the year. It's the easiest trend to pick on in baseball. If you see that there are starters not going deep enough into games, you fade those teams. It happens every year, right? A team has a decent start, but you're just constantly seeing their starters only go 3 1/3, 4 2/3. Eventually, that is going to burn you. You just can't use your bullpen like that early on in the year. So from a strategic standpoint, I think the guys talk about that. They actually practice what they preach, that it's important for them not only to go deep into games and you know, excel in run prevention, Stacey, but also to do that in an efficient manner. George Kirby is the, you know, obviously the prime example of that, maybe in our game right now. But can I get through this inning in 12 pitches? I mean, that's what's real. And maybe even mix in a strikeout or two and just fill up the zone. That's what has really stood out to me. Other than that, I would say, like, on the personal side, I mean, we have fun with everyone on foul territory. Of course, you know, we're not going to hold back. So those 54% comments from the offseason pissed off a lot of dudes. So you like to kind of get a good lap at it at this point. We know what Jerry was saying. I know that the organization is very sensitive about it, which I think is strange. Just laugh it off. It's no big deal. Just go win a World Series. Fans just want teams to try. It's that simple. So we connect with players on that front. And lastly, we just go over whatever the top topics are in the sport and get real talk on it. Like, you had a fight the other day between the Brewers and the Rays. So we'll bring on, it could be a Mariners pitcher, and say, hey, is there ever a time to send a message in the game today? And what is the qualification for that? Because I think we're done sending a message for a bat flip. Like, that's so 15 years ago. Let's have fun. But you can still send a message if your team gets hit by 4 pitches. Like, you can't be a major league pitcher and keep hitting guys. That's when a message is okay to send in the mind of most players that we've spoken to.
Talking about sending a message, Cal said, put some respect on my name last night, man. Going yard with a grand slam. How good is this dude? He doesn't get the love that he deserves, I think. Preseason, during the season, postseason, it don't matter. Talk to me about Cal and how important he is to this club.
Oh, he is a star. He is a star player. He, in my mind, is at least a top 5 or so catcher in a number of ways. Of course, the defense is there. It's not just the hitting, it's the clutch hitting. I think I've already seen, you don't even need to look at a stat. Just if you watch Mariners games, and I'm a night owl on the East Coast, so I watch a ton of Mariners. Dave Sims is a good buddy, and I love his calls. Cal's already had at least 3-4 moments this year, late in games, where he's turned games around. Of course, that pinch hit granny last night was epic. But he does that all the time. He's just got that, right? If you hang an off-speed pitch over the middle of the plate, he will not miss it in a big moment. That's what makes him special. The other thing is he plays. Rarely hurt. They're basically playing him every day. I mean, I know Zavala's the backup. I don't think I've seen him much in the starting lineup. And in today's sport, some teams go with 2 catchers, and they really mix in that backup catcher quite a bit. I host a show every day that includes Eric Kratz and A.J. Pierzynski. So those are 2 catchers that played in the game for a long time. Since we started a year and a half ago, they've talked about Cal Raleigh as much as any catcher in baseball. So we are putting respect on his name on a daily basis. I mean, he's got it all. He is not a 3-hitter. That would be if you're like, hey, give me one weakness. He is not a 3-hitter. He is not the Julio, not the guy that you circle in the lineup where it's like, this is the one guy. But that's okay. How many catchers do that in our sport? Maybe 1 or 2.
I wanted to take a look around the rest of the AL West because I think you're right. I don't think this is a World Series offense, but I'm just focused on this team hopefully trying to win a division that was pretty tight late last year and is pretty tight right now. Houston's in a weird spot. I don't trust that the Rangers in Houston will stay in any way subdued. It's just I've been burned too many times as a Mariners fan. So tell me what you're seeing from these two clubs, maybe especially a focus on the Astros, because they're the most confusing one to me.
Yeah, they are confusing with the slow start and Justin Verlander getting tattooed in last night's game. I mean, the Yankees were seeing his pitches so well, so that's a huge concern. Once you dig yourself into a hole like this, you really need to make significant strides soon after that and go on a nice run. There's plenty of season left. We're only about a quarter into the season, so I'm with you. I'm in the boat of I'll believe it when I see it. We've seen plenty of World Series either participants or winning teams nowadays be in the 500 range as late as mid-August. I mean, last year, right? We'll use recent examples. Last year, the Arizona Diamondbacks were in the 500 range in mid-August. I believe it was like August 11th. They were either two up or two down the 500 mark. You had the 19-31 Washington Nationals start. You've had the Atlanta Braves hanging around 500 during their World Series winning year in 2021 up until, I think, around August. So it is way too damn early to count out the Astros. Are they as strong as they were in previous seasons? Maybe not. Yeah. All the star power's there. A lot of their starters have been down. So I still think that they're a threat, maybe more of a wild card threat because of the slow start. And then on the Rangers side, Stacey, I think they're really good. The one problem you always have with a World Series team is how the pitching's going to bounce back the next year. But I mean, here's your comparison. I think the Rangers' offense is much better than Seattle's offense. If they're in a playoff game, I trust all the bats in that lineup a lot more. There's a lot more length. And the one difference with the Rangers this year versus most World Series winning teams is how many starting pitchers are hurt and going to come back to the midseason mark or sooner. Max Scherzer, DeGrom's going to come back later in the offseason. Those are guys that can pitch in a playoff game, right? Like I always say, is this a playoff pitcher or not? This is a top three or four that I feel comfortable starting and winning a playoff game. Even Tyler Mahle's got really good stuff. None of those guys have appeared in a game yet, and they're all going to be a part of the mix. So that helps the depth for them a lot. It's still a really good division in my mind, and the A's are not even that bad yet.
Getting back to the Mariners, there's a guy, I don't know if you know him, his name's Rojas. Man, he has been doing his thing. It got to the point, Scott, to where I saw him struggle the other day and I felt like the game was over because Rojas wasn't getting on base, which was crazy to me. What have you seen out of him? And honestly, I can't front, man. I didn't know much about him until he got to the Mariners, and he's exceeded all of my expectations. How great has he been this year?
He is a baseball junkie. I can tell you a little bit about how he is off the field because some guys don't pay that much attention to what's going on around the sport. I know that he is a very frequent consumer of Foul Territory shows. We've had him on once or twice. He's talked about specific moments in the show that has stood out. I think it's always cool when you're trying to gauge how much a player loves the sport and is paying attention. And sure, I mean, you could just be a natural talent, but the other side of that is like an Anthony Rendon who really, truly, vocally doesn't like baseball. This is the opposite of that in Josh Rojas. So you're getting a guy that is an absolute grinder. He's bounced around to a couple of different teams. He was a late bloomer, so it's a great start for him. I love it. Couldn't happen to a better person. And I give a ton of credit to Jerry Dipoto for making a pickup like this, right? There were a few moves in the offseason, and I know this was last year technically around the trade deadline, where you're like, are they going to have enough? Should they be trading for or signing a Matt Chapman or someone like that in the offseason? And I think the Luis Urias move was looked at kind of in a down way by most fans and by the baseball industry is like not a sufficient enough way to fill the gap. But right now that's been Josh Rojas. So yeah, I give him all the credit. I hope that it lasts for him. You know, he had one burst when he first made his breakout, maybe 3 or 4 years ago with the Diamondbacks, and hasn't been able to sustain it, but maybe the change of scenery does it for him.
He is Scott Braun, executive producer and host of Foul Territory. And look, if you guys want to consume baseball the way Josh Rojas does, check out Foul Territory on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts with insider Ken Rosenthal, AJ Pierzynski, Trevor May, Todd Frazier, many more big leaguers, bringing daily MLB player interviews, real talk reaction on what's happening in baseball. We use these clips all the time for some of our more fun segments. You guys are so good at getting quotable moments and funny stories, as well as some really, really good insight. We're fans as well. So awesome to hear Josh listens. I love hearing that. And Scott, thank you so much for all your insight, man. We appreciate
it. Thanks, Scott.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Great to be on. And you guys do a great job, too. Love listening to your content.
Let's get to Four Down Territory.
This is Four Down Territory. Going inside the game. With former Seahawks and Coug wide receiver Michael Bumpus.
First down, Bump. Who are some quarterbacks drafted that aren't getting a lot of attention, but you will be keeping an eye on?
Yeah, we know who the top five are, right? Caleb, yeah. You got Drake, you got Daniels, you got JJ, you got Penix, and well-deserved. Those guys should be getting a lot of the attention, but I like looking at, some other situations. The first situation I'm looking at is Jordan Travis with the Jets. And the reason why is because everything he says is that I want to be the successor of Aaron Rodgers, and I think he could possibly be that. They didn't draft him just to kind of sit around and see what happens. They drafted him to learn from Aaron Rodgers and see, hey, what can happen? The only problem I have with that situation is Aaron Rodgers himself, right? Is he going to be willing to teach this young man? We know that he's not the friendliest, all right? Yeah, he wasn't friendly to Jordan Love, but he was at a different point of his career during that time and felt like Jordan Love was drafted to replace him, which he was. This is the same situation here, or it could be the same situation here. Aaron Rodgers is on, will be connected to the team until 2028. He'll be 45 years old. That's when his contract expires. We'll see if he even gets to that. There's a lot of young talent over there as well, but will this talent still be in New York? Breece Hall, Garrett Wilson, Tyler Conklin. They drafted my guy, Malachi Corley, out of Western Michigan as well, receiver who I really like. I'm looking at that situation and saying, Jordan, how are you going to fit in? How is Aaron Rodgers going to receive you? I feel like you're not a threat to him because he's so old now that he's just going to ride off into the sunset. But we liked him. We watched the film with Jordan Travis. We liked him. If he didn't get hurt, we felt like FSU was going to be in the college football playoff. The other guy we're looking at is another guy we liked. Extremely athletic. Big boy.
Joe
Milton. Looking at Joe, his situation is a bit different over there with New England. They drafted May, Zappi is still there, and you still got Jacoby. Why would you draft this dude? The New England Patriots said, look, he was just too talented to pass up, so we had to bring him into camp. His situation is a bit different. His quarterback coach is going to be T.C. McCarthy. The thing with the Patriots is the last five seasons, they've had five different quarterback coaches. What does that say? I mean, Robert Kraft and Bill Belichick have split. Who knows what the messaging is over there? But Joe Milton is a guy that you have to spend time on. You can't just throw him in with the threes and say, go ahead and make this happen. You got to bring him in early and watch film. You got to pull him to the side and do some individual drills because athletically, he's good enough to play in this league, but mentally, can he get it done and just acclimate to the game? But I think he has a chance just because he's so athletic. If it doesn't happen in New England, I think he'll eventually get a chance somewhere else. So we're looking at Jordan Travis with the Jets, Joe Milton with the Patriots. Let's see what happens there.
Third down. Second down. Just kidding. Joe Burrow floated an idea you aren't opposed to. What is it?
No, I'm not mad at this at all. He floated the idea. He goes, look, if you want to go 18 games during the regular season, mm-hmm. let's get two byes. I go, I'm not mad at that. And the reason why I'm not mad at that is because we've already seen this work. If you look in the CFL, they play 18 games, have a 21-week schedule, and they have three byes. They make sure that our guys are ready to go. It's different in Canada. It gets a bit colder in Canada. I played up there, played in like negative 25 degrees. Never thought it could be done, but it happened. Gets colder out there. The game's a bit different, but the season is longer. If you want to expand the season, give the bodies more time to rest. I talked about during Get Off My Lawn how basketball players wouldn't hold up in a football season because there's no load management. Same thing here. These guys don't want to take a week off because my knee is sore. Take a week off because, you know what, we have this week off. So he suggested two bye weeks. The fifth week and the sixth week, you know, you bounce between the teams. And then the 12th week and the 13th week, and then you ride it out. I think it's a great idea. You can even look at the CFL, like I said, and go three bye weeks just to make sure you get the best product out there. If you are willing to expand this season, make sure you're taking care of your players. Give them time to heal. Joe Burrow, man, I see you.
I just think that would be such a – now, it's not a reason not to do it. It would be such a scheduling headache for the NFL to be able to work in, because I don't think they would ever want so few teams playing by splitting it up between byes. Mm-hmm. So having like 8 games, like I don't think they'd ever want that.
Right.
I think that they would still do that thing of you might have a week 4 bye and a week 12, or yeah. you might have, which means someone somewhere is going to be like, oh, our bye is week 1 and
They wouldn't do week 1.
No, not week 1, just kidding. Week 4 and week maybe like a little too close,
week
like
nine,
7. You know what I mean? Where you'd want it stretched further out. It is a scheduling nightmare, but look, if you're going to add another week, you got to sign up for it. That's what you got to work through. It just I don't even want to think of the logistics of that. Third down. Every year you've seen improvements at wideout. What do you want to see from JSN?
So typically I look at DK when he was young and how he's developing. Lockett is who he is. You know, he's like my grandma, my uncles. Ain't no change them. They are who they are. I'm looking at JSN, and I say, all right, how can he get better?
And let me preface this by saying Jason is a better receiver than I ever was and ever will be. Obviously, the 20th pick in the draft. But there's always some things that you can get better at. One, just continue to get creative with your route running. When you get guys from college football and they're just so dominant, so much better than everybody, they don't have to do much to get open. I'm going to get to the top of my route. I'll stick it. I'll dip my shoulder this way. Boom, you're going to move. Strike up the band because I'm putting up 300 in the Rose Bowl like Jason did. So I want to see him be more creative with his body language and his violence at the top of his route. And I want to see him mess with his tempo. He's such a smooth type of receiver. Everything he does is smooth. So when I say tempo, slow it down, speed it up. Mess with your release. Be extremely violent at the top. Be slower at the top. Put him away. Whatever Grubb allows him to do, because you have to be on the same page as a quarterback and get to spots in a timely manner. If Grubb allows him to be more creative, I would love to see it because I think he's more than capable of doing it. This guy's a good receiver. And then also, just become better at blocking. And as a receiver, you don't have to be a dominant blocker. I remember one time, Stacy, preseason, this is towards the end of his career, I line up in the slot, and I got to go get the linebacker. And looking at me through the out the corner of his eye is Brian Urlacher. I go, really? You want me to block Brian Urlacher, one of the greatest linebackers of all time? No, just get in his way for long enough so the running back can run by you. That's all you got to do, especially when you're a smaller receiver like myself and JSN. This dude is a good receiver. Don't get it twisted. But there's always things that you can improve on. When I watch film, that's what I think. He can get better, and he will, because the more comfortable he gets, the more leeway this offense is going to give him in Ryan Grubb. He's going to go do his thing. I'm excited to see how he improves.
Fourth down. What rookie non-quarterback has the most pressure on him? I like this question.
The one who defied everything. Said, I ain't going to pro day. I ain't doing nothing.
Okay.
I ain't going to the combine, man. You picking me at four. You know who my daddy is? Hall of Famer, Marvin Harrison. He's got pressure on him just to perform because he was a pioneer in this offseason deal as far as not showing up to things and not interviewing and doing all of that and saying, watch the film, you know who I am, take me or leave me. I can appreciate that, but I also think it brings a bit more attention to him and a bit more pressure to him. And you're going to Kyler Murray and the Arizona Cardinals, who are not projected to do much this year. Mm-hmm. Can they get better? Yeah, but they are in a tough division. Everyone expects the Niners to run this thing. You got the Rams, who had themselves a good draft and a good offseason. Then, of course, you got the 49ers, excuse me, the Seattle Seahawks. So I'm looking at Marvin Harrison, and I applaud him for changing the game and doing what hasn't been done before, especially for a wide receiver and not a quarterback. That I'm not doing this and that is typically reserved for the quarterbacks. Mm-hmm. But Marvin Harrison said, I'm going to do it my way. I'm looking at Marvin and go, you did it your way. Now you got to go and ball out. I think he's more than capable. I think he's going to be fine. But he did put a bit more pressure on him by not doing all the offseason events.
Information to support your point. There were 6 quarterbacks drafted in the top 12 picks of this year's NFL draft. The player with the second best odds for NFL Rookie of the Year, not offensive player, Rookie of the Year, is Marvin Harrison.
Yeah, and it should be.
Yeah.
It should be.
I mean, obviously, first is Caleb.
Yeah, number 4 pick.
Go figure.
You're going to be the number 1 target over there. Yep, all you.
Yeah, so much hype around this guy. You're listening to Bump and Stacey on Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app, an NHL prospect revealing his age. This one's going to make you guys feel old. And also, a former MLB president shares his wild daily breakfast. Don't go anywhere. The timeline coming up next.